Chapter 18. Enter the Accomplice. And the dragon persecuted the woman, which brought forth the man-child. Revelation of John, 1878. Edward Ahrens was in the class that Dr. Eddy taught in Clara Schott's home in January or February of 1878. By mid-February, Mrs. Eddy was defending Ahrens to other students, but that was not so when she first met him. She shrank back from accepting him, for she recognized him immediately as the sensuous man of her visions 2 or 3 years earlier. She was over-persuaded, however, by Dr. Eddy, who had been favorably impressed by Ahrens' eagerness in class, and by Ahrens himself, who was as intentionally ingratiating as his ambitious, powerful personality would allow. In 1907, Richard Kennedy told an interviewer, quote, that after their partnership was dissolved, she felt the pinch and did the best she could, end quote. 30 years earlier, a definite part of Kennedy's malicious thought projection to Mrs. Eddy was that of a relapse to the poverty she had experienced. As she struggled to meet the unusual demands on her resources and to overcome the lack of funds, his thought projection to her students was that she was greedy for money. The effect of this was already evident in Barry's and Spofford's accusations against her. Since the time of Jesus, no one had cared as little for money and worldly things as had Mary Baker Eddy. But her students failed to appreciate her sacrifices for them and the cause. As she had written to Daniel Spofford, quote, I have allowed my students to think I have no rights, and they cannot wrong me. May God open their eyes at length, end quote. Before long, Edward Ahrens proposed to do that very thing, whether it was his persuasive aggressiveness or the combined secretive thought of this accomplice and of Kennedy, the originator of the dark drama of 1878, matters little. Kennedy was seeing the manifestation of his mental malpractice in Mrs. Eddy's acceptance of Ahrens into her home as a trusted associate in the position George Barry had held. She had written to a student in February, The effect I saw on Mr. Ahrens when you were here was owing to the influence of mesmerism. I wish you could see what a nervous desire he has to do us good, and you would like him. She was right about the mesmerism, but did not then know how much it was affecting her. Mary had leaned very heavily on her husband, who was always beside her, helping in his quiet way. In contrast to Gilbert's mildness, Ahrens proposed to forge ahead aggressively and clear the way for the teacher by taking matters into his own hands, acting as her counsel and relieving her of some responsibilities. The assistance was not unwelcome to someone as harassed as Mrs. Eddy had been. Ahrens knew about her contract with Kennedy and the others, and she had never collected, and he convinced her that she was allowing her students to do wrong. In the third edition of Science and Health, she wrote, In the interests of truth, we ought to say that never a lawsuit has entered into our history voluntarily. We have suffered great losses, and the direst injustice rather than go to law, for we always considered a lawsuit of two evils the greatest. About 2 years ago, the persuasions of a student awakened our convictions that we might be doing wrong in permitting students to break their obligations with us, refuse the payment of their notes, and to deny their considerations when they were filling their pockets by their claims to be practicing that for which they refused to pay us. The student who argued this point to us, so convincingly offered to take the notes and collect them without any participation of ours. We trusted him with the whole affair, doing only what he told us, for we were utterly ignorant of legal proceedings. As always, Mrs. Eddy's main interest was the cause of Christian Science. She turned over her 1870 contracts from Kennedy, Stanley, and Tuttle to Ahrens and resumed work on the revision of Science and Health. She devoted her time also to new students, to loyal students, and to the Christian Scientist Association, which convened about once a week, occasionally at a student's home, but more often at number 8, Broad Street. Both Mr. and Mrs. Choate had become interested and active in Christian Science. One meeting of the association, which stood out in Mrs. Choate's memory, was held in the Eddy's parlor in the spring of 1878. The members present, in addition to Mr. and Mrs. Eddy and Mr. and Mrs. Choate, included Miss Dorcas Rawson, her sister, Mrs. Miranda Rice, Samuel P. Bancroft, his brother, Henry Bancroft, Mrs. E. N. Taylor, and perhaps two or three others. When they came to the question and discussion period, Samuel Bancroft raised the question that has continued to be a vital issue to the present day. He said, quote, "Should we say, or can we truthfully say, we as individuals are perfect, pure, holy, or infallible now?" End quote. Clara Choate recalled the following. Mrs. Eddy arose quietly and with dignified composure of manner, in a firm, convincing, though seriously pleasant voice, asserted, quote, "I am infallible. I am infallible now. We are infallible now." End quote. We students were all surprised and to some degree shocked. Mr. Bancroft began an earnest expostulation against such a statement. Other students present sided with him. Even dear Dr. Eddy, in his quiet, patient manner and tender voice, tried to enter a conciliatory compromise. But Mrs. Eddy heroically stood her ground and with a gracious decision still declared, quote, "I am infallible now," end quote. The power of this truth thus uttered by her was not lost upon the students and was more or less felt by all present. One said she had come with a headache, another with fear of spine, another with throat and a cough. And so each one, thinking of their troubles, suddenly found the air changed, and their conditions also changed to their immediate consciousness of relief from evil. One or two felt worse, which Mrs. Eddy said was as good as if they felt better. This great thought had started an upheaval then and there. The solid ground of old beliefs was broken. The stir of love, of hate, smiles and tears in even that small company seemed like a battlefield between truth and error. Mr. Bancroft, almost in temper, with apparent disgust, coldly left the meeting, Mrs. Eddy kindly saying, quote, "I have told the truth." End quote. This battle between truth and error within the ranks was minor compared with the onslaught against Mrs. Eddy from without. The case with George Berry was still unsettled. From the time of his defection, Daniel Spofford began working against his teacher, endeavoring to draw her students away from her. Early in 1878, she had written to a student, quote, "I have been so besieged for a whole year that my native sense at times seems almost yielding, and I almost fear the end of my besieger's desire will come, unless I have an armistice." End quote. The student, Mr. Atkinson, endeavored to arrange an armistice with Spofford, who rejected the idea, saying that he hoped the subject of reconciliation would never again be mentioned. In his attempt to alienate the students from Mrs. Eddy, Spofford was calling on them mentally, and often in person, to desert their teacher and follow him as the new leader of the Christian Science movement. This malpractice had some effect on their health as well as their work, causing Mrs. Eddy to bring it out in the open and discuss it, as she was wont to do with everything. To one student she wrote, quote, "Take up Spofford thus. He cannot affect his teacher or her students to make them sick or turn them away from truth and their teacher." End quote. To another who was in frequent contact with Spofford, she wrote, quote, "Guard well your own and your dear family's symptoms. And when you feel doubts of me or physical ailments, take Spofford up with the contradictions of his arguments, and the symptoms will disappear." End quote. Miss Lucretia Brown was a middle-aged spinster from Ipswich who had been a semi-invalid since a severe injury received in girlhood. She had been marvelously healed by Mrs. Eddy when she began studying Christian Science in 1877. She had also been helped by Daniel Spofford, but turned to Dorcas Rawson for assistance when Spofford defected. When she suffered an unaccountable relapse in the spring of 1878, both Miss Rawson and Miss Brown feared that it was caused by the mesmerism Daniel Spofford was practicing. Though Spofford was but another tool in Kennedy's hands, the mesmerism he practiced unraveled one more step in the uncovering of evil. In the second edition of Science and Health, Mrs. Eddy wrote, "Mesmerism is practiced through manipulation and without it. And we have learned by new observation the fool who saith, quote, there is no God, end quote, attempts more evil without a sign than with it. Since Science and Health first went to press, we have observed the crimes of another mesmeric outlaw in a variety of ways, who does not, as a common thing, manipulate in cases where he sullenly attempted to avenge himself of certain individuals, etc. But we had not before witnessed the malpractitioner's fable without manipulation, and supposed it was not done without it, but have learned it is the addenda to that we have described in a previous edition, but without manipulating the head." Ahrens lost no time, from the moment he gained Mrs. Eddy's confidence, in filing suit against Richard Kennedy. He acted in her name and supposedly on her behalf. The case came up in Judge William Parmenter's court on the 14th of March. The judgment awarded Mrs. Eddy the $750 still owing, plus interest and costs. Kennedy immediately filed an appeal. Almost immediately, Ahrens filed several other suits involving Mrs. Eddy and Christian Science. The method of evil at this juncture seemed to have been the old game of divide and conquer. Daniel Spofford was basically sensitive and sincere and had been the most devoted and successful practitioner of Christian Science. The best, perverted, becomes the worst, and Spofford was now the most potent tool the enemy had found, and the endeavor was to keep him that way. Some of what Ahrens did in Mrs. Eddy's name was without her knowledge and consent. The case he now filed against Spofford for unpaid tuition may have been one of those actions. A second case filed against Spofford most definitely was begun without her knowledge. Ahrens called on Miss Lucretia Brown, affirming to her that Spofford's malpractice was the cause of her problems, and that Mrs. Eddy desired that she sue the malpractitioner at a court of law. Mrs. Eddy disapproved when she learned of the case, but Brown versus Spofford was already filed, and Mr. Ahrens was acting as Miss Lucretia's counsel, so the teacher supported her student's action. Mrs. Eddy was not averse to bringing the practice of malicious mesmerism to public notice. Whether it accomplished anything in that day other than notoriety for Mrs. Eddy and Christian Science is doubtful. The notoriety, together with the conflict with Spofford, was what Kennedy desired. But despite the malicious intent, all things do work together for good. The Salem Witchcraft Trial of 1878 was the first public exposure of malicious mental malpractice in the present era. Public understanding of the issue is necessary to its elimination, whether the evil practice be called mesmerism, hypnotism, ancient or modern necromancy, or witchcraft. And the case did provide court records and newspaper accounts for future generations to study. Litigation was not the only area of Ahrens' influence in Mrs. Eddy's affairs. He was most insistent and persuasive in his argument that her class book for teaching and practicing Christian Science should not be included in Science and Health. He convinced some students and may have affected her decision temporarily. His attacks on her babe, Science and Health, which began as friendly persuasion, became wicked malpractice and blatant theft a few years later. After rescuing her child from these attacks, her comment was most charitable. When I revised Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures in 1878, some irresponsible people insisted that my manual of the practice of Christian Science mind healing should not be made public, but I obeyed a diviner rule. Her class book, already published as The Science of Man, was not included in Science and Health as the chapter entitled Recapitulation until the third edition 3 years later. The second edition was a near disaster. When the proofs came from the printer, the Eddies were confronted with a confused mass, full of countless errors. After struggling with the wretched material for some time, Dr. Eddy called upon John Wilson, whom he knew to be a printer of some repute. Mr. Wilson responded by going over the confused mass of proofs with Mrs. Eddy. Though the damage was beyond repair, he showed her how she might salvage about 170 of the pages, so that the money expended would not be totally lost. W. F. Brown and Company had not done a good job on the first edition, so they had gone to Rand, Avery and Company, for the second, hoping, of course, for improved workmanship, only to meet with a far worse situation. The careless printing errors were a grave disappointment and a severe financial setback. But the cause of the problem lay with her recalcitrant students and their malicious mental malpractice.